Welcome to Video Games.
Games, video games, video games, video games, video games, video games. Video games, 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 video games.
It's February 12th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 1.
And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Steve Gaynor.
And I'm Jake Rodkin. And
all right.
Yeah, we're back. Video games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. We're going to talk about them.
It's good to be back.
It's good to be back, Steve.
Yeah. I'm psyched about it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that actually on the drive over here, is that the previous 5 months actually sort of disappeared from my brain in a creepy, horrible way.
Oh, really? For me, it just feels like longer.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Parking my car and failing to find parking near your house and then walking over here and then sitting down to record a podcast. Yeah.
It's like old times. It feels like it was just yesterday.
It feels like it was just
that Nick Brecken was here. Moment of silence.
I have a fun siren. Yeah. So hey,
no, I'm sorry. The last 5 months of your life were deleted by having no podcast.
That's okay.
I think it was only like 2 months, but that's okay.
It's been like 6 months.
Jake said
it's been
five.
Like nine.
No, you're right. We stopped in November.
Yeah.
So it's been like three.
Yeah.
So what have you guys been up to in the previous months? Steve made a video game.
Yeah.
I made a video game as well.
Hey!
Everyone made, well, not me, but
Chris, you made some financial reports, maybe some statistics, some news about the video game industry, the art and business.
You wrote an article about a video game?
Correct.
Yeah. So we've all been busy.
We've all been doing things.
Yeah.
It's certainly true.
None of us have just been sitting around on our ass.
And like every week we've recorded a podcast and then we just deleted it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, we listened to it.
Right, we got to listen to it.
They were pretty good.
Yeah, they were great.
They're going to be way better than whatever this was. I think we hit our peak around like episode -7, January 6th.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's probably the best one.
Oh, so good. Yeah. We flew Nick back for that one.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, man. But yeah, no.
Too bad we didn't release that. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, live and learn.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about this week on the Idle Thumbs podcast?
Well, actually, I'm kind of curious because, Steve, your game came out.
Yeah, it did.
And
the Steve Gaynor's Match 3 Express.
Yeah.
Out on Yahoo Games Portal.
Hidden Objects, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Hidden Object
on Xbox Indie Games.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's mostly like a massager app, but if you press a button, it changes the color on the screen.
I heard, though, if you pre-ordered it, you got Bioshock 2 included.
That never panned out.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Because you put a lot of work into Bioshock 2 for it to be the pre-order gift
right.
for Steve Gaynor's Match 3 Massager.
Match 3 Massager.
Well, promotions, you know, sometimes they work out, sometimes they don't.
But so how's Bioshock 2? Was that you made that?
Were you going to ask something about it?
Yeah, well, I'm curious because you went to the launch party for it.
Yeah.
Separately, you went to the, like, GameStop
midnight launch
extravaganza explosion.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was cool.
I heard you signed a dude's face or something?
I signed...
You drew a Big Daddy on his face that he was then going to turn into a tattoo.
I signed one of my coworkers' necks.
Okay.
Well, that's not the same.
But we all signed a dude's jean shorts.
Jean shorts?
Whoa, were they dude's cut off jean or shorts?
They were shorts. They were intended to be shorts. And they were being worn at the time.
That's good.
Yeah.
He didn't take them off to make it easier
he could have been fully dressed.
They were breakaway, so he could have just kind of flipped them off. I mean, it would have been no big deal.
Did he request that you sign his Big Daddy, and then you just signed his shorts?
Oh, I wish that had something that clever had happened. No, he just said, sign my shorts! Sign my shorts!
Well, that's all right, though.
Maybe he was saying, salute my shorts.
Maybe he was saying, salute your shorts. Hey, dude. No, but I mean, it was cool. There was that whole thing that Elizabeth Tobey and company
the community manager for 2K
Games. Yeah, the Splicers Unite kind of, you know, they had those gatherings where people would dress up and stuff. So the last one of those was nearby. And
was that like an ARG? I didn't really follow it.
No, well,
it was just like a hangout and be excited about Bioshock thing?
There was an ARG that was apparently very in-depth, and they were like flying actors around to meet people in real life and give them clues in a briefcase and all that kind of stuff. But then they did a separate set of things, which I guess were associated with like Red Bull somehow, but they were called Splicers Unite. And it was just like groups of people would get together and they had,
it was just meetups basically.
Well, they were kind of meetups, but they also had like people
like
giving
a flash
stuff
mob.
Out. They called it a flash mob. I think those have to not be corporate. Yeah. I don't know if a flash mob really counts if it's not just people doing a thing, but
so it's like a street team, like a viral event.
Yeah. But they had the people, you know, like dressed up as the Big Daddy and Little Sister.
Yeah, I saw some twit pics.
Yeah. So those people were, you know, those dressed up folk were there for the midnight launch, and a bunch of fans were dressed up in
their
period garb.
They opened the GameStop with a Big Daddy drill. It was amazing. I wish they'd.
They just punched through the glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, it seemed like a couple hundred people showed up.
Sweet.
And we signed the hell out of all their items. It was fun. It was very lively.
100 guaranteed sales.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, like 20 of our development team showed up. It was like a really good turnout from the studio, so it was weird. It felt like a real thing.
Did your crowd kick the MAG crowd, like, ass? Because... You guys shared a night with the MAG people.
Dante's Inferno as well, right?
No, I think the midnight thing was specifically for Bioshock 2 and MAG. Didn't that
sale?
Game come out the week before?
No.
No, Dante's Inferno
came out the same day as Bioshock 2.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
So they gave MAG and
Yeah, I know that the Toys R Us website had a promo for those two games. So if you went to the Toys R Us game site, it was just Bioshock 2 with like a crazy like mud and blood splattered Big Daddy, and then the fucking Dante's Inferno guy there. Like, Toys R Us?
Wow.
And then Jeffrey the Giraffe in between the two of them.
Getting his head sliced off and drilled.
Right. The drill ripping through his stomach.
Dante is sewing the bloody cross into his chest.
Right.
Into Jeffrey Giraffe's neck.
Yeah, man. His long neck. It's an elongated cross.
But yeah, people bought the game. People are playing it. And I think I like it.
I'm playing Bioshock.
One.
But.
I hear that you finished Bioshock 1 on like...
Hey, attention, everyone.
Yeah. That's true. It only took you 2.5 years.
Video game. Yeah.
I'm sorry to steal your thunder, but you actually did it.
I'm sorry to steal your thunder. I made Bioshock 2. Anyway, congrats to you.
In the amount of time it took Jake Rodkin to complete Bioshock, Steve Gaynor constructed Bioshock 2.
An entire additional Bioshock. Well, I'll play that soon. So. But it's nice to finally feel like maybe I've played a video game.
Hey, what did you think of that game, Bioshock? Bioshock.
Bioshock.
It takes place in the bayou.
It's like a swamp.
Yeah.
Game.
Swamp Shock.
Swamp Shock.
I'm gonna call it that.
I wish.
Bayou Swamp.
You liked it though, right?
I did like it. Weird. I liked Bioshock.
Yeah.
Huh.
We brought back this podcast because we knew people were really missing us talking about all the latest games and topics and trends.
What people want are Bioshock 1 impressions.
Yeah. I play, man, you want to get even more topical? I just completed a shock as well. System Shock 2 from 1999.
That is a shock.
It is quite a shock.
Nick Brecken system. Back in Maryland is playing through System Shock 1 right now. Yeah. So he'll send us
That's
a wave
actually,
file.
Isn't that
over
actually
the phone.
True?
Is he playing System Shock 1?
Maybe not.
We'll find out.
You could have said yes.
Oh, it's true. He is.
Yeah.
Nice. That's crazy.
I just asked him
That's
right
wacky.
Just now.
That's super wacky. You guys are playing them backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I hear Bioshock 2 is no System Shock 2, Steve.
It is not the same game as...
As System Shock 2?
I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's a fact, pretty much.
It's undeniable.
So, did you enjoy System Shock 2? I saw that you posted a blog about it on IdleThumbs.net.
I did, yeah. You can go there and read it if you want. Yeah, I really liked it. It was cool. I had played this game quite a while ago and never actually beat it.
Would you believe that at one point I played the first 10 minutes of System Shock 2 and then
did
stopped
you really?
Playing it?
Really?
That's pretty much every game that's ever been made. that's the case for
No,
me.
But you actually have played the first 10 minutes of System Shock 2?
Yeah.
Does that mean that you frequently pay $50 for 10 minutes of entertainment?
Yeah, did you buy that game?
Yeah, because... Everyone's supposed to play System Shock 2. I just didn't.
Fair enough.
I was excited by the first 10 minutes of it. It had modes.
The first 10 minutes are not exciting.
You didn't even building your character if you only played 10 minutes.
I mean, 10 minutes in the actual video.
You woke up.
We don't need to talk about this right now. You completed the game.
You had a wrench?
I probably did. It's a while ago.
It's a cool game, though. I would recommend people play it. I did it without any mods, like graphical mods or gameplay mods or anything. And I know it wasn't, even when it was released, it wasn't the most polished graphical experience, but it's kind of one of those games where once you get into it, there's so much to do that I didn't find myself dwelling on that. I mean, I would say if this is a game you're interested in, just go try and get it running. The hardest part is just getting it working on a computer. But once you do, it's really cool.
What class did you play as?
I played as the soldier class, yeah. But it seems like the class system is almost pointless. I mean,
it's not.
Really? Because you can invest in anything. Like, it doesn't matter, right?
You start out in vastly different spots and with different equipment. Like, it is really hard to turn from a PsyOps guy into a soldier.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I mean, like, it is basically an obfuscated difficulty system. Like, if you started a PsyOps, and you'd never played the game before, you're pretty fucked. Like, it's extremely difficult to survive.
Just because your guns don't do much damage and breaking all the time.
Yeah, you can't use most guns.
Right,
and
right.
You can't repair them and stuff. You have to use your psi powers.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, even as a soldier, early in the game, I found an assault rifle. I carried that thing around for like 10 hours until I had enough points to, because you can't use it until you have the maximum points in standard weapons.
Yeah, I played System Shock 2, not when it came out, but maybe a year after it came out.
Yeah, that's when I first played it.
Yeah, and I picked it up. I played it as a soldier and played all the way through it, and it was difficult and extremely tense, and you know, I had to like really manage my resources and everything, and that's the easiest class you can play as. It's like the pure combat class, and I would not really want to have a harder time with that game than that.
Well, I feel like I could go through it now and have a much easier time.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, one of the interesting things about System Shock compared to modern games, and this was true of some games. I mean, I felt kind of the same way about Deus Ex. Like, the first time you play it, you're almost kind of just learning how to play it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, I still had a super great time, and all of the actual narrative stuff is the same, obviously, when you play it again.
Yeah.
But it's interesting playing a game like that that's so dependent on you becoming really, really masterful of all these systems at the same time. I mean, the number of things you can theoretically be thinking about or doing at once in System Shock 2 is ludicrous. I mean, you're dealing with movement, you're dealing with getting to an area on this big space station that is largely just explorable up to you. I mean, it's not linear. I mean, the objectives are linear. Yeah. But the geography is not at all.
The space is just there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's gating and stuff. You can't just go all the way to
the end. Regularly are just going back and forth. And there's certainly no arrow or guide you know, I mean, there's nothing set up to...
Does it even mark your goal on the map? Or do you just have to compare, it said to go to this labeled location and then that's labeled on the map? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's cool.
No,
yeah.
I liked it a lot. It was cool. I mean, like, I understand why a game designer does not do that these days for the most part, but it was really cool playing it and knowing you were responsible for that stuff. I mean, you're responsible for noting, like, well, not in all cases, but often, especially in optional cases, you have to, you know what number to put into a keypad on a door. The game's not just going to keep that shit all for you and enter it automatically. Well, you have to,
like we've talked about on the podcast back in the day, is that just PC games aren't about simulation anymore. Like, just no games are at all, and just leaving that
not to that extent anyway.
Yeah,
but I mean, just leaving that stuff up to the player is way more of like
it asks a lot
the mindset of being in a simulated space instead of a game.
Yeah,
I mean, games basically pick their battles now when it comes to simulation, right? I mean, they'll simulate certain things like a physics system and like a projectile system, and you have games that are more or less simulations in that respect. Like,
that's much more fidelity
based
than experience based, right? You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that I.
Well, it's the difference between like simulating. Well, because I mean, there is a difference between a game that simulates a lot, such that when you like deliver an input to the game, the number of simulations that are running can create wildly divergent outcomes.
Yeah.
And a game that doesn't simulate those things. I mean,
yeah.
Even though most of that simulation is happening on the computer's side, that's still a more divergent experience.
Right.
But a game like System Shock, just everything.
Well, System Shock actually trusts that you have a fully functioning brain running. Like, when your character remembers the password for you, like, it's you know, like, ugh, this, ugh.
Well, you just don't have, you don't have to pay attention. I mean, the cool thing about System Shock 2, and again, I understand why a designer, I understand reasons a designer might not want to do this, but it is cool because it, you do actually have to pay attention to what people are saying to you in the audio logs, or you have to go back and listen to them again if you didn't the first time. I mean, you actually have to be cognizant of these things. Mm-hmm. Most games, especially now, you know, you can pretty much ignore that stuff. And yeah. Even in a game that's on the more open-ended side in today's spectrum, you can still basically kind of like be the pinball that kind of just keeps bouncing around, but you will be propelled forward eventually. And in System Shock 2, that just will not happen. I mean, you absolutely have to drive it yourself.
In that particular example, I mean, I don't know. The thing that I don't like as much about like them giving you information but not tracking it for you in any way is just that you don't have any tools within the game to track that stuff. And well, it feels like you have to go outside the game to retain that information, either by memorizing it with or sometimes
keeping notes.
Yeah, is pretty unlikely because you could need the code 2 hours later or writing it down. Whereas there are some games like in Deus Ex, for instance, they have a separate tab that's like notes and codes, and it pulls the relevant information out of stuff you've listened to into that, so you can refer back to it.
Well, System Shock 2 does have some of that.
Oh yeah,
but it's unless I'm just making this up, which would be weird because I only played it a few days ago. But it's possible that I'm making this up.
And are weird.
I'm pretty sure that when it comes to actual required objectives, there's a little page in your PDA thing that lists like door combinations and stuff.
Yeah. But for like
for totally optional things stuff, where if you find a log and someone's like, all right, man, I'm hiding this gun and I stuck it in a wall and it's got this number. I mean, that's just, you have to just do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can still go back and listen to the log again.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's cool. It's cool playing that. And it's been a long time since I've played a game that required me to be that immersed. Like the game, which is one reason I say that I was even less affected by the dated graphics than I usually would be, is because the game really asks so much of you that if you're going to get into it, you have to be in it.
Yeah. You have to be totally invested past caring about the surface.
Right.
Because you have so really much cool. other stuff to pay attention to.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's an interesting point that you make about the focus of simulation shifting, you know, because like that you're kind of talking about like informational simulation sort of, you know, whereas as we go further into the hardware that's capable of physical simulation,
environmental simulation. Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting to me just because there are other valid, interesting things that come out of that. And it's not like you can't have both at the same time, but like when you're playing BioShock versus a System Shock, like because there's all this like element propagation and ragdolls and physics and stuff, you can have very emergent outcomes of your like combat inputs, you know, that wouldn't be that are totally not part of like a System Shock experience at all.
Right.
I personally like needing to have more investment in the experience to track what I have to do and figure it out myself. And so, like, when I played BioShock 1, I turned off the Quest Arrow, and I was playing on PC, so you can turn off the shader on objects you have to use, you know, the glowy shit.
And you can have that in BioShock 2 as well.
Yeah, yeah, PC. Yeah. And the loot glimmer and stuff. So you can turn off a lot of the guidance stuff, which is nice because at that point you're signing up for like, okay, game, I'm gonna pay attention. You don't have to tell me how to play
it. All this stuff.
I'm gonna listen to what you tell me to say and look at the map to find where it is, and I'm good, you know.
Right.
But on the other hand, assuming that it doesn't compromise the possibility of that kind of unguided experience existing at all, it's good to have guidance for other players available.
Right.
You know?
No, that's totally true. I mean, there's a reason.
Yeah.
That's
like Jake Rodkin, like Jake Video Games Rodkin.
I like all that stuff in theory, but when I played BioShock, I kind of just wanted to play it because it's been 3 years, so I turned every possible thing on and put it on easy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I killed Fontaine in 3 seconds with lightning.
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, is that it's great.
But it was still sweet. So
yeah, it's great that a game like that can be more accessible for people who are, on the other hand, signing up for, I don't really want to have to figure everything out. I just want to play through it and experience it.
Yep.
Oh, oh, yep. But no, but yeah, what you said about the two types of, or not two, but the various spectrum of simulations. I mean, that is what I was sort of alluding to before, especially if you look at the difference between, for example, a BioShock or like a Call of Duty.
Yeah.
There are fewer interesting simulation inputs in a Call of Duty game. Like, it's pretty much bullet goes in a guy.
Yeah, there are different ways of delivering a bullet
to
a man.
Yeah.
Or possibly throwing a grenade with your offhand and, you know, and hopefully you find that interesting. I mean, it's kind of it's all kind of that same thing where it's like there are all these different potential inputs and weird emergent shit that you can play with in the combat in BioShock. Or if you don't care, it's also possible to just spend all your money on machine gun bullets and shoot everyone. You know, and there's a spectrum of experiences you can have within that frame. So
I started doing that by the end of System Shock 2, by the way. Because I just started getting so many points to spend on stuff that I just got all these ridiculous guns and like, it was awesome.
You had a refrigerator
My
box.
My inventory, like 75% of it was just massive guns.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I will say that in System Shock 2, like I said, I played all the way through around when it first came out and I loved it and everything, super scary. And then I went back to play it. I don't know. Maybe I guess it was around the time that BioShock 1 came out. I think that might have been why I put it back in. And I played through it up to the first part where there's like, you know, a character upgrade station to spend your cyber modules. And there was just like 4 pages of like a 3x3 grid of possible tiny upgrades.
Crazy.
I was just like, what? What? And they were all just symbols that were totally unlabeled. You had to like click each one individually to get the description. And it would be like, this is a 0.5% increase to you. I'm like, what?
Yeah, the so size stuff especially.
It was extremely
like
overwhelming. So yeah, I mean,
it's definitely true.
Even for someone that is invested in being part of that space and figuring things out for themselves, you can have just like an avalanche of of tiny mods to your character that it's hard to say exactly if like that level of having to delve into the numbers is really beneficial to almost anybody. You
know? That was honestly one of the most interesting things to me about System Shock 2 was just how granular it was. Like, clearly there was more granularity than was needed.
Yeah.
But it was really cool just to experience it, especially looking back now.
Yeah, yeah.
As an interesting study in that respect. And I agree. If you were making that game again, you would want to
consolidate a few things.
Exactly.
I mean,
put each of those up to scrutiny, basically.
Yeah, and I think the granularity is almost like one of the things that defines a, I don't know, like not more hardcore, but just a more like character building focused game. Like when I compare Mass Effect 1 to 2, for instance, the fact that they split out, you know, like you could probably have 8 or 10 different abilities with like, what is it, like 20 maybe levels in each
of which had sub like key marks basically
with and then paring that down to 4 or 6 abilities with 4 levels, you know, it's in playing Mass Effect 2 and making that comparison, I don't feel like it really lost a lot, but you feel, I guess, less invested in sort of like building your character up because you have to touch them so less frequently, and it's just sort of like there are less choices to make.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's interesting that scale of how do you want to approach building your character up?
I agree. Interesting.
I love interesting things. Don't
we're
you?
We're getting this episode off to a...
Jake, video games Rodkin.
Start.
Yeah. You guys want to talk about the opposite of System Shock 2?
I just heard a sweet racing car rev
up. Some dude blasted by. It was probably drifting.
Yeah. San Francisco 2049.
Yeah.
San Francisco Rush.
Yeah. There so, speaking of really complicated emergent systems and simulation, grids of minute upgrades, we were checking out the Heavy Rain demo
a few
minutes ago.
Yeah.
That was an interesting experience.
It was weird. I only leveled up like 3 times during that demo. I expected it to be more.
We had a lot of really slow motion asthma intakes.
Well, our guy was like really, really unsure as to whether he wanted to like knock on doors or like get his wallet out of his pocket. He was just
really
like a really
sort of wobbling his hand. So maybe we should mention what we're talking about.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have known until an hour ago.
So the very first thing the Heavy Rain demo tells you to do is when it, you know, it's the sort of interactive movie thing, but it's a lot of QuickTime events, but they're all dialed to analog stick motions, like you sort of spin the right
sort
analog
of
stick in a
circle. Animation along with the analog stick.
The intention seems to be to map like how his hand would move to how you move
the
analog
stick.
The
first thing the demo tells you though is you can when one of those prompts comes up, the speed at which you follow the prompt will control the speed of the animation. And it's like, do it as slowly as you'd like. So you can just make this guy spend this excruciating, like, 15, 20 seconds just pulling his wallet out of his coat.
And then almost getting it out, and then be like,
and then, because the controller
goes back and forth.
Yeah, the controller times out, or you can rock it back and forth. So you can make a guy sort of, like, crazy blooper video style take his sunglasses.
I mean, you've basically seen, like, a YouTube poop where they just scrub back and forth through, like, someone
thing
like
needs
making
is
a face.
Luigi's face wearing stunner shades coming and going, I'm gonna win, and then like pretty sweet.
Because it's just like, okay, I'll get near this door, and now I scrub this guy's hand back and forth for like a minute, being like,
Blake, stairs,
asthma. So basically the amazing thing about it is that it's supposed to take itself extremely seriously, and you're supposed to be into it and be like communing with your character by going through the same motions he is and everything. And then the first tutorial is like, here's how to break the game and make it look stupid. Try it now.
Try making this guy take the slowest possible puff on his inhaler. Make him sidle past this garbage can uncomfortably, awkwardly, like,
and it instructs you on the best way to expose all the flaws in their animation system.
Like the game world, the animation, the effects, blatantly Sony and Quantic Dream invested bazillions of dollars in this game, and then it's like, and now make it look really bad.
It's the most fragile, delicate flower of an experience possible. If you don't play it exactly how David Cage intended you to, it just goes off the rail and it's absurd.
It's really enjoyable to look at until the guy pulls sunglasses out of his pocket in such slow motion that you can see them sort of go and like attach into his hand. Anyway.
It's a weird game.
What if you could analog control how quickly he said stuff?
Blake!
We're describing how to make
most
the game
whores
even better.
Clean up their apartments!
Chemically living conditions!
Why isn't everything timed by the analog stick in that game?
Most things are.
Most. So are controlled by the analog stick?
Let me go back in the pocket.
I think Float. It's hilarious that we've gravitated towards this one thing, because most people are not going to see this.
Yeah.
I think everyone is going to try opening their car door really slow.
That's true, but I think people are going to give up on it quicker than we did. Yeah. We're like, make him inhale really slowly.
We were just egging each other on
every single time.
We're like,
reverse it back up. Animal bloopers. Make him fall out of a tree and back.
It's because the only possible way to enjoy this game, like, in a non-comedic fashion, is to play it by yourself and be super serious about it. Because it's just like, you just have a fart button constantly. It's just like, and ruin.
I think more people than you think are going to be into that game.
I think that they have to be.
What?
Yeah. Like
David Cage will come to their house and beat it out of them if they're not.
No.
He'll really slowly reach for an ether egg that will then sort of gravitate into his hand. But then the controller will time out and he'll put it back in his pocket.
Well, no, I'm saying you have to be really into it for it to, like, come off
well
at all. And then it can be a positive feedback loop of you like it more because you're taking it seriously, so it's coming off well.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
But if at any point you step outside of that range, it's just like...
If you step outside that rain.
That heavy rain.
When you step outside that heavy rain.
0.23 inches. If you, if you're willing to roleplay with that game, it will become an extremely nice looking real time cutscene.
Yeah.
Blake here.
Lieutenant Kata Blake, through the ARG on the internet to download it on your PS3 console.
The final step of the ARG for North American customers is to figure out how to sign up for a European PlayStation Store.
Well,
account.
I think by the time this comes out, it's actually supposed to be out.
Oh, okay.
On the North American one for real.
Don't bother with what I just said.
Unless you want to.
The ARG, I mean.
Oh, ARG.
The ARG is obsolete.
So that was us taking a big old dump on 10 minutes of heavy rain.
It was an amazing experience. The one guy has VR goggles.
Yeah, there is a guy who takes his glasses off and on.
David Caruso has VR goggles.
I am super excited by character movement and by the amount of money in that game. I just want the game to be a game.
There's a lot of money.
Oh, heavy rain. Weird. Anyway, you cannot make triangle patterns to mop floors in this game, which also is disappointing.
Is that a thing you can do in another game?
In Fahrenheit.
Oh, forgot about that.
You do have to shake your six axis to...
What are you doing that for? Oh, to shake your inhaler.
Yep.
Take a break.
A Blake.
Let's take a Blake.
Lieutenant Kata Blake.
Lieutenant caught a break.
Video games.
Everyone remembers fighting their cat when they loaded up Wolfenstein. It's a classic childhood experience.
You gotta try and time it with the load bar. No, Steven. Color your hair.
Vertigo.
So we're back.
New from Visceral Games.
I watched a super early Hitchcock movie on Netflix.
Vertigo.
New from Visceral Games, Vertigo.
Alfred EA Hitchcock's presents. Vertigo.
No, I watched, what was it? I watched Sabotage. It was like a 1930-something Hitchcock movie.
Yep.
You seen it?
Yeah.
Really? What did you think of it?
It was a while ago that I saw it.
But I didn't think it was that good.
It was one of his ones that, like, used the conventions of a stage play much more.
Yeah.
Obviously. Kind of like Dial M for Murder and Rope, almost.
Yeah.
I mean, where it's...
But it was even more primitive than those. I mean, it was like... It was actually... This sounds really stupid to say, but it was actually, like, a film that made me more confident about where video games might go. Because it was like... Yeah. I mean, it was so... You could tell it was by someone who knew what he was doing, but like the screenplay was kind of clunky and like characters would just interject little clever things for no reason, just so that the camera could cut to a guy saying clever thing, but there's no real reason for it. It just reminded me so much of like modern era video games where just things happen because someone has kind of a cool idea, but it doesn't, part of something.
Yeah.
Like
watching Hitchcock's, you know, career progress from basically almost like fixed point cameras that are just looking into a three-sided room and it's basically just a filmed stage play up to the end of his career, you know, it's just amazing to see the progression of how he handles the form. It's a crazy thing to see over the course of like 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we also watched the whole, we just saw a billion movies at the annual Film Noir Festival in Noir City here in San Francisco. And I always really enjoy that because all those films...
Amazing.
Come from they're usually from the 40s. Most of them are from the 40s.
It's like right and when dudes are starting to really figure it out,
exactly.
But not quite.
Yeah.
Well, because it's not the main dudes that are figuring it out. These are like B films by guys
they're
that
sort
are
of
kind
fringe,
of
fringe guys usually.
Yeah, they're kind of like aping what the best filmmakers are doing and kind of just trying shit out. So it's really interesting.
But it's also like I feel like that's the era where basically that's like right at the beginning of sort of the modern era of film.
Yeah.
Not in the micro term, but I just mean, you know, those films basically are made like modern films. They're just older.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're using the same kind of camera technique and general structure and stuff, at least in the ones that are made fairly competently. And it's cool, but it's cool seeing all of the like first take of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, where someone will start doing like, more complex shots.
This is like one of the first dozen films where weird nonlinear story events happen or whatever.
Well,
I mean, just, I don't know, stuff like that.
But just done in, done in a way that feels kind of put together.
And, that happens now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Just interesting camera techniques and stuff.
Yeah. And it's awesome seeing that stuff when you can tell it's still very formative and sort of evolving. I really like that. And it always makes me more confident. As opposed to my other movie about video games, which is like, video games are going to be stupid forever.
Yep.
They're super lame. I don't actually think that.
It's easy to...
I actually do.
Whoa!
No, he does.
It's a secret.
It's easy to go there. It's easy to play some kind of game that just like really disappoints you. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, every game is like this.
Games are the worst things.
And then you realize you're wrong.
On a totally unrelated note, I have this reviewer's guide for this game, Dante's Inferno. And there was a funny thing.
Is that
in it,
based on the epic poem?
It is. It's a work of literary merit. And
the video game is?
Yes.
So you have the reviewer's guide sent to reviewers to review the game?
Yeah.
So this is telling you.
Well, I don't actually have the game. My coworkers.
This looks like a magazine. What the fuck is this?
This is
like a glossy, like full color little promotional guide, but it's a reviewer's guide.
What are the chances that the manual is in black and white?
Yeah. Well, they had to print many fewer of these.
Yeah, this is like a big, this is like a book, big full magazine sized game manual, basically. I've never seen a reviewer's guide. I didn't know they sent some.
We're not supposed to be discussing this publicly, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's okay. I don't actually have the game. One of my coworkers did, but I thought the reviewer's guide was funny, so I asked for it.
Now it's like you've played the game. You could probably write the review from that manual.
But the thing that I thought was funny was, so I actually haven't even played the demo either. I don't know if you guys have, but apparently
I played the demo. There was a boob in it.
That's what I heard. I heard there actually might have been plural boobs. Many a boob.
I think
were they the ones where the nipples retract and babies come flying
out?
No. Oh, you didn't get that far?
I didn't play all the way through the demo.
My boob was
the part that I played up to was where you find your wife has been killed, and it's supposed to be sad and poignant, and filling the foreground is her exposed boob of her dead body. And then Jesus. Her soul appears. It's like a blue translucent version of her, and her boob is exposed. So
it's basically a quest to recover that boob.
He doesn't even, like, cover up her boob.
I didn't mean literally recover the boob.
So what's up with this review guide, Chris?
I'm looking at the map of hell on the back.
There's apparently in the game itself, Virgil, the poet, is like your buddy.
He turns against you in the final act.
Oh, man. Dark secret revealed.
I don't know if he does.
From what I've heard, though, he actually, like, his lines actually are taken verbatim from the Divine Comedy. I don't know if that's true of all of his lines, but
I read it that it was.
Yeah, okay, so that's cool. That's a thing. However, the reviewer's guide includes Virgil's words of wisdom, and I enjoyed these because they're, I think, some poignant little summations here.
So these are potentially, at least theoretically, direct lifts from...
Yes. Well, because, see, they're prefaced here with little... They have little excerpts from the cantos, right? So, here we go. I, the only one, made myself ready to sustain the war, both of the way and likewise of the woe. Canto 2. So there, I mean, you know, there's some stuff. And then you get...
What else is Virgil?
Well, you might be surprised to learn that Virgil's words of wisdom also include... If you haven't attained level 3 in both unholy and righteous, now is the time to do so. Thereafter, you may concentrate on obtaining useful skills. But the thing, my favorite one this is my favorite Virgil's words of wisdom. Prepare to face the 10 challenges of the 8th circle of hell. Here are some recommendations for conquering each one. Challenge 1. Kill all enemies using infinite mana. Sins of the Father is a powerful weapon in this battle. Challenge 2. Get a 100-hit combo. Using holy barrage and jumping is the best way to attack this challenge.
Wait, what part of the poem was that from?
Oh, I think this was Canto 19.
Oh, okay.
That's what it says.
If only it said that.
Yeah. I haven't read it. I also haven't played the game, but I figured like reading that reviewer's guide basically is kind of enough exposure to the work to get a good feel for it.
Now you know how to get that combo, though, and defeat the enemies.
Yeah, I assume Dante...
He advises that you defeat them.
Yeah. So Dante comboed, what, some demons and then the poem was
100 hits, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, also, in Challenge 4, Dante stayed in the air for 8 seconds. Air grab and throws mixed with a heavy scythe attack make quick work of this one. That's, I think, what happened there.
Sounds like a good poem.
Well, in Challenge 6...
High school is badass!
In Challenge 6, he destroyed all enemies and protected the human. This can be achieved by using holy blasts and grab kills. So, I mean, I think
that's... It was achieved. You're telling us the story.
Oh, right. Actually, in the story, it was achieved. Correct.
Hmm.
In games, though, it's interactive, so it could be.
Yeah.
Or...
Either that or... game over. Yeah, he was overcome by the forces of hell.
But he continued.
Yeah. It's the power of our medium. A book only has one ending.
Video games have infinite endings.
Yeah. Some of them look the same, but they can happen at different times.
That's true.
Fact.
Well, so then what's your review,
Chris,
of the reviewer's guide?
My review of the viewer's guide is kill all enemies before health depletes. A variety of attacks work here, depending on what you've upgraded. But Holy Barrage and Heaviside attacks usually work well.
So that's sort of the pros section?
Yeah, I think that's kind of my summation.
Yeah.
All right. So that's
like 8 out of 10.
Okay.
We really shouldn't be talking about this, though.
Why? Does it say not to talk about it on a completely unofficial podcast?
This is another quote from the Divine Comedy, I think. It's words of warning right at the beginning.
Oh, I see. Like, is it that line, abandon hope, all you who enter?
Right. It's sort of paraphrased. This guide is intended for review purposes only and is not to be distributed publicly.
That's they didn't go with the Longfellow translation on that one.
Right. It's sort of a modern translation.
Interpretation.
Yeah. It's don't share this guide.
Thanks for sharing that guide with us, Chris.
Chris Ramo.
I just want to help you get through hell with wisdom and words.
You're the Virgil to my Dante.
My goal.
Now, what else is up?
We both played Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, it's true.
We both beat that video game, right?
Oh, you guys beat it? Yeah. I haven't played that game.
Oh, man. Then you don't want to hear these end spoilers we're about to discuss.
Are you some sort of savior?
Oh!
Someone double-crosses you? No?
Not exactly.
I don't think so.
Not really. Wow.
Then I do want to play it. I should play the first one if I play one.
Yeah, you should. Probably.
One day. I'd play Bioshock 1, so...
Yeah.
In a year or two, I'll play Mass Effect.
Yeah. In all honesty, I don't know. I don't know if I would... I don't... And I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I actually don't know if I would suggest, oh, play the first one instead of the second one, or vice versa, to someone who hadn't played any Mass Effect. Instead,
but I mean,
if you're only going to play one.
A big part of my enjoyment of the second game was seeing
the little callbacks to the first game. Video Games Rodkin were to play Mass Effect 1 through then play Mass Effect 2. Yeah,
that's true. He's trying it with Bioshock.
Hey.
He's going for the 1-2 punch.
That is true. I'm into the fact that basically... You know, within some double-digit number of hours between beating Bioshock 1 for the first time, I can just roll right into Bioshock 2, which is probably not the case for a lot of people.
Nope.
So that'll be weird.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like when I got into, like, The Wire in the fourth season.
Yeah.
I was like, I can just watch all of these.
Blast through them, yeah. That's what I did as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you enjoyed, Chris, that in Mass Effect you liked the little callback things that you're saying?
That's I enjoyed cool. it.
Yeah, I
would be liking that.
I would actually be interested to play like on a different profile just to see what the game was like without any of that stuff.
Apparently, most of it is the shitty stuff. Oh, wait, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, to play Mass Effect 2 without a Mass Effect 1 profile.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, most of the decisions are like the undesirable ones from what I've heard.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, like a certain guy dies.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I mean, just they were trying. I mean,
versus
I think.
What? No, I mean, because
they're trying to reward you having played through it by.
Yeah.
Giving the more positive choices come across. Or like
right.
You get those as gifts, basically.
Well, you get them if you did them in the first game, whereas you have no option to do so if you...
Right.
Oh, so you play the second one and it just kind of assumes you made a decision in the last game?
Right.
Oh, I thought it might just like not refer to that content at all.
No.
I don't know.
It definitely...
They,
just, like,
they fill in the backstory
has
with
a
the,
set of things that happen, but there are things that aren't as cool, usually.
I see.
So... Yeah. It doesn't seem like a thing that would add a lot to the experience.
I just wondered how they what it would be like, because I had a profile that I had just played through like not long before Mass Effect 2 came out.
I had two.
My God, I mean, I have two.
Mother
but
of God,
I didn't use both of them. They would have been relatively similar in in how they were.
Mine had different stuff. My ending was different, so I.
That, well, that's true. I mean, I had a different ending on mine, so I guess I could play through it and see what it was like. But I mean,
it made no difference to me.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it did to me. It didn't seem like it would to me either, because the thing I had done to change, like, because the ending of Mass Effect 1 determines whether you save the council or not, and so I specifically went and did that second playthrough so that
spoilers.
Whoa! So I could get the save the council ending, and then I played Mass Effect 2, and they never mentioned the council. And it didn't really make any difference at all.
Yeah, it's funny to me, and this doesn't really bother me that much, because through Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2 and just generally Mass Effect in general, I care way more about all the little moments than I do the plot, which I really almost couldn't care about less.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it seems like the game itself acts the same. Like, the whole first – it seems to me anyway, like the whole first plot of Mass Effect 1 really – makes almost no difference. Like in Mass Effect 1, you're basically fighting against this weird sort of massive, like,
effect.
Hive mind. You're fighting against this huge effect, nice. This big hive mind like alien force that's sort of incomprehensible and wants to destroy all life. And then you work for this kind of semi legitimate shadowy organization. And then in the second game, you do the exact same thing, but the names of all those things are different.
Yeah.
So like the name of the enemy is different and the name of your organization is different, but it's like the exact same thing. It's really odd. It doesn't really seem like it actually continued to me, except in all of the little things, which is what I actually care about. So, I mean, I'm fine with it as a player. It's just odd.
Yep.
You were a bit more of a private military contractor in the second game.
Yeah. But it doesn't affect anything, though. I mean, it's exactly the same, right? I mean, you still just go around and are like, I'm Shepard.
Yeah.
And this is my favorite store in the Citadel. You have a lot of favorite stores.
Yeah.
No one seems to mind.
They all love you.
They all do. What did you think about the game, Steve?
I liked it.
Me too.
I don't know. You, at least, Chris, were Maybe both of you guys were not into it in the beginning. Is that just the
I still have mixed feelings about it. Like,
not on purpose.
But. I have two separate opinions about it, and one is that as a sequel to Mass Effect, it's definitely not the sequel I would have wanted. But as just a video game that I played through that happened to be a continuation of Mass Effect, I really enjoyed it. Like, I wasn't not having fun when I was playing it. You know, and I thought it was, for the most part, quite well written. And
I mean, they made a lot of changes, a lot of low-level changes, and I thought some of them felt just kind of arbitrary. Like, they changed that change it, and it was not necessarily for the better, not necessarily for the worse.
Exactly,
it's just
right.
a different
it was just
thing.
Like a different thing.
Yeah. And some of it was definitely felt like more needlessly complicated for no clear reason. Like the whole, you know, you drive your little spaceship around the universe map and you have to fuel
that
up
was really
and stuff.
Weird,
and it's like, why do I need fuel for this? What are you people trying to do? Like, there were just some confusing changes and additions. Overall, it generally made the whole game more focused on the core combat loop
absolutely.
And kind of facilitated that.
Yeah.
Which was positive in that it felt like a more cohesive experience mechanically. It also, I felt like kind of flattened out the experience overall, where it was sort of like, all right, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to start a mission, talk to a dude,
then
go into a bunch of combat corridors that are just going to be linear, and that's going to take about 25 minutes.
Especially when you
and
walk into an arena, and it's like, I wonder if there is going to be cover to take, you know, hide behind here, and a dude, because it's like, you're going through these very tight quarters, you come out into a room, and it's literally just like, it looks like someone made a room that was actually built to have a cover-based firefight.
It's a little
suspicious. And then at the end of these, Mass Effect 2 actually goes, and has your mission complete and the score tally and stuff, right?
By the way, I don't think anyone else finds this as funny as I do, but I think it's really funny.
It's like Wolfenstein, it's just a 3D version of you sort of pulsing in like a three-frame animation.
Well, it's what it does have, I mean, Jake, have you seen the mission screen?
No.
It is hilarious. It's like this weird, it's one of the only pre-rendered, like 3D pre-rendered things
it
in the entire
3D
game.
So it is like Wolfenstein 3D.
It's like especially if you're playing it on the PC at otherwise high resolution,
right, when you're playing it.
All of a sudden it's like this fairly low res pre-rendered thing with a big space orb, like glowy space orb in the background, and a guy with his legs crossed on a chair, like smoking a cigar. It's the most hilarious, like, late 90s cheesy cyberpunk PC.
So what you're saying is I should, like, play Mass Effect 2 first.
You should. Yeah. It's, I like the fact that you go from this slick blue spacey game, and then at the end of the mission, it's like mission, and it's just the cheesiest goddamn. Also, the way the guy has his
fly in along the border of the screen.
No.
He's the elusive man.
He is the elusive man.
What?
And the way he crosses his legs looks like he only has one leg. And now that I've said that, you'll never be able to see it a different way.
That's good.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a funny thing. It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the game. It's just very odd that this is the thing you see every single time you complete a mission.
Yeah. I don't know. So, I mean, yeah, there's some weird stuff. I generally felt like the first game was less predictable moment to moment and had more variety to it. It was like, okay, I'm going to land on this planet. Maybe I'll talk to some people. Maybe I'll have to drive my thing.
Maybe I'll go shoot a guy,
but it's just a little section of shooting a guy, and then there'll be more talking to people. You know, it felt more like everything was more fluidly constructed, whereas this is very like staged out, where it's like, talking part, fight man's part, talking part, mission finish.
You
know,
it's
very
game,
formulaic every time you have a main mission or a side mission.
Right.
And so it can kind of wear on you if you play a lot of it all in a row, you know? But
what's funny about that is it's also easier to play a lot of it in a row because you can just snap, bam, bam, bam through it. But
it feels much more tightly paced.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, you can really feel how tuned it is to be like, all right, get the info you need, fight through a bunch of guys. It has a, you know, nice kind of, you're propelled through it and you kind of eat up the missions. You know, it's very like bite sized. Like, you get through one of the missions and it probably does take you like half an hour, and you can feel like, oh yeah, I did that whole mission. Sweet.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to do another one, or maybe I just want to save the game and quit and do another two or three of them next time. You know, it's a very consumable game, which
it's
is interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's a shame because it strips away some of the stuff I liked most about the first game, which was especially the two main locations that I associate this with are the Citadel, most of all, and then also Novaria, which are both locations that just have a lot of overlapping quest lines, both important ones and unimportant ones, that you're constantly just flowing between. And anytime you can leave whenever you want, come back whenever you want, yeah. keep doing them, stop doing them, do a different thing. A lot of them have multiple courses of resolution, impact each other. Yeah. It's just, it's really cool.
Whereas there are overlapping threads like that, technically, in Mass Effect 2, but they're extremely simple, where it's like, walk past a guy who says he's looking for his data cube.
Yeah.
Look,
it's on the other side of the room.
Down the hall. Yeah. And then come, and sometimes it's in separate things. You'll like hear it from a guy on some city, and then you go do one of your crew's side missions and you find this object that's like, here's a locket. And you're like, oh, okay. And you just go back and give it to them. And it's like very, very, you know, simple. It doesn't have any kind of the like depth and sort of like politicking and like betrayal and stuff you could do in the dialogue system between characters of the first game. They streamlined a lot of things, and they probably got the
basically
effect they were
it's
looking
the Dark
for.
Empire Strikes Back of the Mass Effect trilogy.
Oh my god! How did you feel about them pulling the KOTOR like morality KOTOR. Visual stuff back in? Okay, Fable, whatever.
I didn't like that. I thought that was really dumb.
You start becoming like veiny and smoking and having glowing eyes.
Yeah, that was something I was kind of disappointed about, just because it was something I specifically was very impressed with in Mass Effect, especially coming off of like KOTOR and stuff.
They
were like, okay, we're not going to have good and evil. We're going to have Renegade and Paragon, which is just I play by the rules, or
a loose cannon.
Yeah, I'm a loose cannon. And it is. It's like good cop, bad cop, basically, but you're still just a dude. You're
gray.
Well, you're lawful in any case. It's just, do I beat the information out of somebody or persuade them?
Right.
You know? And what was interesting to me about it was, you know, you can fill up those meters independently, so you can be half good and half bad and any, you know, full good and bad at the same time. But they never reflected it in any way except what kind of dialogue options you had. Like, if you acted good all the time, you were better at persuading people. And then in Mass Effect 2, I was impressed because it was subtle and it had restraint. And then Mass Effect 2, they were like, you know that whole thing that we have? It should be more like you're good and evil. And if you act like a renegade, you have giant glowing scars on your face and red eyes. And I was kind of like, that seems like a step backwards.
Yeah, it's a very odd choice.
Somebody was into it and decided to go for it. But it seems
it's
like
funny because
it seems weirdly regressive, because it felt like such a step forward
like
in the first
Dragon
game.
Age, which is the like fantasy, you know, like sort of closer to Fable, that kind of thing, where that is the world that is lord of good and evil.
Right, your guy just turns to stone.
But that game isn't like that at all.
That's cool.
So it's weird that Mass Effect 2 is the one where they decide to.
But then they gave you the surgery machine that you can turn that off.
Which I did.
if you want.
But. Yeah.
The subtlety machine?
Yes.
Right.
The restraint machine. The stop giving me red Terminator eyes because I slapped a guy machine.
Actually, the other thing I don't like is that when it gives you the little, speaking of that, when it gives you the little option to be a renegade or a paragon in the middle of a conversation, you never know what your character is going to do. And it's almost impossible for me to not just want to see what it is. But sometimes I'll do something really outrageous that I would not have actually done or wanted my character to do.
I had a great experience with that. Yeah. I had an awesome experience.
What was your
experience? Because partway through, like, for some reason, I was deciding I wanted to get all the Paragon points I could. It was because it was one of the things where two of your crewmates get pissed at each other, and I, like, took sides with one of them. Which means you have to get to full Paragon to like convince them to go back to loyalty or whatever. Anyway, so I was like, all right, I'm only going to get Paragon points for the rest of this game. And so you do one of the missions, and they kick you into a cutscene in the middle of like the combat section, and some Krogans run out, and they're like standing on this balcony, and they start like yelling at you and taunting you and stuff. And as soon as they start taunting you, they're like, "We're going to go to your planet and destroy your civilization," and it like pans down and there's a giant like explosive canister underneath the balcony. And the right trigger to be evil shows up on screen, and I was like, no, I'm not going to. And their speech goes on for like 30 seconds. They're like, and then we're going to kill them and eat their bodies, and once we eat their bodies, their skeletons. It's just like, come on, the right trigger's right there. It's like
the game
zooming
wants
in
so
on
bad.
The explosive, and it's like, you will never
the
recover.
Icon starts to like grow.
And it just went on and on, and I just ignored it, and finally it just went into normal combat. But it was really funny. They didn't expect anyone not to blow those guys
up. Well, that's kind of my problem with the system, is that the game seems to be, like, I don't know. It feels less like an expressive choice.
I thought it was interesting because they had almost an equal amount of Paragon ones like that. Like somebody could be freaking out and you could like, kind of be like,
yeah, but it's
hey,
all,
you know.
I mean, it's all only ever one or the other, right? I mean, it's not right. like you have both choices.
Yeah, yeah. It's only one or the other. But the thing about at least the Renegade one that was interesting to me was when I started ignoring them, often afterwards, it would give you the next section of the dialogue tree, and there would be, like, a Paragon dialogue option. Yeah. So you could get Paragon points only if you had restraint and didn't just punch the guy out, which I thought was
that's pretty cool. That's a good point. Video game. Video games. Vidges. You want to take a break and then do some reader mail stuff?
Yeah. Let's break it up.
Man, we got, like, 22 months worth of reader mail to get through. It's going to be a while.
718 months.
How many years is that?
I don't know, math years? Worst.
Oh, years.
Yeah, yeah. Games.
Math.
Math, math.
Collier. I don't know.
Collier Howe.
Lieutenant Cotta Blake.
Collier Hare. Whores.
Dental plan.
They got whores. Whores.
Lisa needs braces.
I've never seen a whore keep such a clean apartment.
Lisa needs braces.
Stairs.
Lieutenant Cotta Blake. Color your hair.
Asthma.
Stairs. If you like rain, highways, and mud, or whatever. Ah.
If you're looking for bodies. Dead, yeah. If you're looking for dead bodies, rain, and highways, we got plenty.
You come to the right place.
You come to the right location for a number of different highways, some bodies, and rain.
Use your sunglasses to see a lot of footprints.
This rain is a bit heavy, wouldn't you say? Nah, nah.
What? Disc eject. What?
That's your PlayStation 3 exploding from very far away.
The bomb squad, dish over the top.
Well, I think underneath the bomb squad hood, yeah, underneath the bomb squad hood, it's just.
Oh,
that's you farting because you were so nervous.
Someone was squeezing me.
On YouTube.
Whores.
Video game.
I seen whores that don't give a damn about their living conditions. I met a number of whores. I carouse with whores frequently.
Ah, whores. I got asthma, what? Use the analog stick to rock back and forth to catch your breath. I'm David Cage.
Put down the controller to watch fat man be beaten to death by a skinhead.
Whores.
A guy named Ben Appleyard wrote him to ask, wondering if we played Star Wars Empire at War.
No, I didn't play it.
I didn't either. We saw a demo of it, though, at E3. Do you remember that? Like, years ago?
Oh, we saw the demo.
And the guy was like, if you're the evil character, you can manipulate enemy troops. And he was like, really? Because when I'm the good character, I just kill everyone. So, a guy has a game dream. We got a Dreamcast.
Hey, a dream.
Bringing it back.
I know you're new to this. We used to have people write in about dreams they had involving video games.
Huh. That sounds stupid.
Well,
you sound stupid.
Don't ruin this.
This is all we live for. It's your problem.
So anyway, what was this guy dreaming about?
So this was Michael Johnson. Cares. He writes, Dear Idle Thumbs, please come back. I recently bought both Far Cry 2 and Torchlight on sale on Steam, and now I'm finally interested in hearing you ramble about them endlessly. I've already played Trine, so feel free to have an episode about how great that is, too.
Why doesn't he just go back and listen to all of the episodes that we talked about those games on all of them?
As an inducement, here's a gaming-related dream you can read out.
Ah.
So here's his dream.
All right.
I'm sitting in some sort of briefing room. There are three rows of long benches. I haven't read this yet, so hopefully it's good. There are three rows of long benches with other people sitting at them, and I'm in the back row. I realize that the person sitting directly in front of me is a guy I used to know at university. Curious as to whether friendly fire is on, I pull out my pistol, take aim at his head, and pull the trigger. Sure enough, a red health bar appears under his head, a few more shots, and he falls bloodlessly to the ground. I'm not ashamed of my actions. Jesus. I tell the shocked onlookers that it's all right. I can just quick load to the beginning of the level and start over. They are angry that they will have to wait here while I repeat the level, so I promise to be quick. I am now viewing myself from a top-down third-person isometric camera. I watch as I sprint around a shopping mall, repeating all my earlier actions at full tilt. Unfortunately, I seem to forget my promise to return and ended up wandering off and doing something else altogether. Also, I have a... So that was the dream. Weird. Okay.
Well, congrats on that dream.
All right.
Also, I have a bonus Idle Thumbs-related dream. This happens sometimes before you guys stopped casting your pods, and in retrospect...
Are you sure you shouldn't have pre-screened this? This could go in a bad location.
I don't know. Why?
Let's find out.
Are you having a prescient dream yourself about this dream?
Bad omen.
Dream.
All right, so this is his dream. I'm standing on the side of the road talking to Chris Remo. I'm telling him a long-winded story, and he's clearly bored but too polite to tell me to go away.
Suddenly, doesn't sound much like a dream to me. We're living the dream.
I guess you just complimented me and said I was polite, but bored. Suddenly, we notice Nick Brecken standing on the other side of the road.
That guy doesn't have anything to do with this podcast. I don't.
Hey, Nick, I cry out to him. Garnet Lee is your boss now. He visibly deflates. I know, he replies forlornly. It's the end of the dream.
Garnet Lee is not his boss anymore.
That's true. That's why it's...
Who is that?
He's the editorial director of Gamefly, owner of Shaq News. He was Nick's boss for some period of time.
Now I know.
I would normally end by saying, keep up the good work, but you haven't done any good work lately, so I can't. So restart the good work, I guess, Michael.
We'll restart it. We did.
We listened to your dream. Your dream came to us in a dream.
And then we casted it back into your own face.
Hunter Simmons. Hunter Simmons writes, in case you ever cast again, I bought Torchlight on your recommendation. It's a lot of fun, and I see myself dropping many hours into it. It was good timing to buy this during winter break, right before a 10-day vacation from work. God, I love video games. By that, he probably was referring to
Jake. Thank you. Wow, man.
Highly complimentary set of reader mail this month.
Chris is polite and bored. I am loved. You're not mentioned, Steve. You're not coming up much in these.
Actually.
Hopefully I won't be.
Wait.
Do y'all ever itch to podcast? He asks. Nick Breedon mentioned on Twitter that he planned on mining his new coworkers for podcast compatriots. Does this make you, Jake, Chris, and perhaps Scoops feel betrayed? I feel betrayed. In my head, that was the guy's email. In my head, I often forget Scoops' real name and call him Two Scoops, which I think is grosser than Hot Scoops. What's even more disgusting is Two Hot Scoops. Two Hot Scoops of Steve.
Wow.
All right, that's my creepy email from the year. Okay. Bird noise, mention of an arg, trine.
All right, yeah. You can probably...
How's it going, Two Scoops?
You can probably two cut off scoops. Emails before they say bird noise, because they all end that way.
I think it's worth reading.
It's all like, bird noise, wizard...
Should we talk about bird noise for a second?
Oh, yeah.
We need to take you on a tour of the past. I don't know how to explain this or segue into this.
What are you guys doing?
Here you go.
Work. And then over the cue ball, we'd go, okay, you know, your turn or whatever. Yeah. We'd have some kind of thing. And then you'd alt tab back.
Yeah.
And you know,
was that like a secret code?
Yeah. Like, burn call.
I have heard that.
Oh, you have really?
Yeah.
Back when you listened to Idle Thumbs?
Back when I listened to the Games for Windows podcast before Idle Thumbs?
Apparently GFW.
Oh, really? I listened to it, but I did listen to that podcast. But I totally didn't remember this.
No, I listened to that clip when you posted it on Twitter or something a month ago.
It's amazing that... So, yeah.
Actual story being...
GFW beat us to the punch on the baboo, apparently. Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, like, amazing. It sounds exactly the same.
Yeah, apparently, what was it, like 6 months before Idle Thumbs started or something? Yeah. That clip?
Yeah, someone went, boo-boo, and called it a bird sound. So, shit.
And then, owned. We thought...
Beaten by our own game from the past.
I think it's supposed to sort of... It's the piece of connective tissue that lets you know that Idle Thumbs and GFW are actually secretly maybe in the same universe. It's a big fan debate.
Right.
Sort of like how in Halo...
It's not really
like
canon,
have the marathon
but it's speculation.
Right.
Like, so...
Dorky PC
but we
games
have, we have an emergent physics engine and stuff. Yeah. We're the Halo to their marathon. GFW is a Mac-only podcast originally.
And Microsoft sold them out.
It's weird. It's like Microsoft bought them out and sponsored their name. So pretty much, I think that's pretty much what happened.
That's a very interesting history that you shared with me.
I extrapolated all of this from them going in one episode.
John Brooks writes in an email entitled "My Daughter." Whenever I tell my daughter that we're going to listen to a video game podcast, she asks if it's the one with the horse bag. When I told her you guys were not making any more podcasts, she was distraught. Sad face.
Wait,
love pup.
Love pup? What?
Well, love, comma, pup. The guy pup. Goes by pup.
P-U-P?
Yes.
All right. Is there any indication of how old his daughter is?
My 37-year-old daughter.
Well, it's like my 3-year-old daughter was listening to you guys talking about getting raped in the face. Like, who would play this in front of anyone below the age of, like, 15?
Even what weird horse bag conversation was not probably age-appropriate for a daughter who is young enough to say, is it the one with the horse bag?
Okay, honey, we're going to listen to a video game podcast. Please do not listen. What?
Anyway, right. Farts, rape, donkey cock, vagina. So,
a horse bag.
Horse bag.
A horse bag. A horse bag.
He would luck out if that's the only phrase
right.
his daughter learned from our podcast.
Donkey cock? With donkey cock country.
Yeah. So please anyway. Pop right back, John Brooks, and tell us how old you're. That sounded horrible.
That's just the kind of podcast this is.
Yeah. Basically, I want to know the age of your daughter. That's my question for you, John Brooks. Internet.
Stop making that motion, Chris. Just because the people at home can't see it.
Oh, I'm just taking my sunglasses on and off.
You're doing it really slowly.
It's true.
It's odd.
They keep popping into your hand.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
Lieutenant Cod of Lake
Toblix writes the new CSI game. This is a question for video games here.
Do I really? All right, we're going. Well,
you know the answer.
I probably don't.
PC or Xbox 360. Hello, just want to get first in line for the next podcast. What platform should I get the new CSI game on? I'm thinking PC will give me superior mouse controls.
What the fuck is
but
this,
maybe
Chris?
I should be focusing. What?
All right.
We have a person who works for the company that makes it.
I will say full disclaimer before you read this email. I have never played a Telltale CSI game or worked on one. I went to a playtest once and played through the first case.
Which system did you play it on?
It was CSI 3, which was in 2006, and it was PC only at the time.
Do you feel it would have been enhanced with an Xbox 360 Microsoft console game?
I know that CSI 4 is a frequently cited game for quick achievement whoring.
I see.
Ah. Well, does the PC version have games for Windows Live? Because then it's equal in achievement.
It does not have games for Windows Live.
Yeah, okay, Xbox.
We've spent a lot of time talking about this already. You want to finish his email?
Well, he says, I'm thinking PC will give me superior mouse controls, but maybe I should be focusing more on the TV show feeling of playing the Xbox 360 version from the couch.
Yeah, I agree with him on that last part. That's what he should do.
You heard it from the source.
Jake
Rodkin. The guy who doesn't make the CSI game.
Which is Jake Rodkin.
That's
Which
true.
Is everyone in this
That's
room.
In this room.
Fact.
Okay.
The guy who works near the guys who make CSI.
Yeah, I sort of sit
game.
Right across a small hallway from one of the people who works on CSI.
God, that must be so cool.
He's a nice guy.
I bet he is.
John Drake, he designs those. Anyway.
You should ask him. Get back to us next.
All right.
Time
just call him.
We'll follow up on this.
Yeah, right, call
him
a friend here.
Do, 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 do. I'm at home right now. Oh, so, okay, that was awkward.
That was a quick conversation.
Yeah.
He answers his phone with, I'm at home right now.
It's concise. It's
the opposite of an answering machine message. I am at home right now, so
I'm
please
here.
Don't leave a message.
Hang up. Anyway, let's not talk about this now.
Okay.
What a weird email.
Well, most of our other email is people submitting names for the podcast, which clearly
we used
when we decided to call this the Idle Thumbs podcast.
We handpicked one letter in order from the submissions, and then it ended up sort of word jumble style spelling the Idle Thumbs podcast, and we thought that was a brilliant name for the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Yeah, so we called it that. We'll still give some people Torchlight codes and put some good ones up on the blog.
Yep. Should we talk briefly about EA Presents?
Sure.
You should not make that face ever again, though, Chris. You're making a worse one. You want to explain this because you invented
gross.
It accidentally? It's your latest invention, patent?
I didn't invent it. It was invented by Ian Bogost, the video game academic.
Thought it was Bogost.
Bogost, whatever.
I don't know.
On his Twitter feed, he posted, I don't even remember what his was. He offhandedly posted EA Presents something.
Some literary work that he Did he?
Oh, he was Kill All Mockingbirds. Yeah. Was the one he did, and then I replied to him with EA Presents Death to All Salesmen, and then I made up like three or four more on my own Twitter feed, and then other people started replying to me with their own examples of potential reworked literary classics to video games, and then I created a Twitter feed for them, which is, if you want to find it, it's twitter.com/EA_presents. Right. And there's probably about 100 of them up there now.
A bunch of
Jesus, that's a lot.
Reader submitted potential
literary adaptations to hardcore video games.
Right. So we have.
I mean, essentially, these distill the essence
of the original
great literary works
interactively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, we have EA Presents War and War. We have EA Presents Terminate with Pride and Extreme Prejudice. We have EA Presents Fear and Reloading in Las Vegas.
That's good.
Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah.
sorry. Every time I think of this one, I crack up. EA Presents The Great Gatling Gunsby. EA Presents...
I don't like that one.
Yeah. I gotta go to a different page. More. Should have probably condensed this down before I...
Nice one, Jake.
Tom Chainsawyer.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Very clever.
Charles Dickens' Bloodhouse and its sequel, Great Decapitations. The Body Count of Monte Cristo is amazing.
Fucking winner. That is the all-time champ, whoever did
that
one.
Well, I also like The Kiliad a lot.
The Kiliad is good, yeah.
EA Presents Origin of the Species, Origins.
That's really good, yeah.
There's a million of these.
Yeah.
And some of them are funny.
Literally.
Yeah. I'm not going to read some of these.
You're not going to read most of them.
No, I'm not going to read most of them.
The funniest thing about it is
Slaughterhouse 5000.
I like that one.
The funny thing to me is that it's based on... They're jokes on Dante's Inferno, which doesn't change the name of the thing at all.
That name, is already so goddamn extreme.
Yeah.
Twitter is not giving me the full list, which is too bad.
Yeah.
It's fine. You got the good ones.
But I like the idea that that maybe in this sort of universe, Dante's Inferno was not even, even that was sort of too literary to communicate what they were trying to
amping
do.
They're it up for the sequels.
Yeah. It's like, well... We had a decent idea here with taking this idea and turning it into a visceral
action game. What are the next two epic poems that followed the first one that were actually written?
There's Purgatorio and Paradiso.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the three, Catholic afterworld.
Yeah, so I mean, I would be very surprised if, the third game were called Dante's Paradise. I'm sure it'll be called, Dante's Inferno, Paradise Lost.
Milton and Dante team up for a battle royale.
So, I mean, I bet that the further games will actually go closer to the territory covered by EA Presents
Origin
on Twitter.
Of the Species Origins.
Did you guys see the leaked concept art that some former EA concept artist put on a blog that had a bunch of canceled game concepts? One of which was Gunhead, which looked hilarious. It was a guy, you think it's not going to be this, but then it actually is a guy whose head is a gun, and it has all these different configurations with, different barrels. It was the fucking funniest. God, I wish they would have made that game.
How extensive was the concepting for it? I mean, was there a
was
lot
it
of, like, work
of Gunhead,
put into
or
it?
Was there more?
There were just – it was, a whole bunch of character studies of this guy and all these different configurations his head can be in, different types of guns. It was fucking sweet.
You saw a gun limb, right? I don't think so. TIGSource had a make a schlocky B movie game contest as one of their make a game in a week things.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
And gun limb is the best one, which is a guy whose arms and legs are all shotguns. You rotate around with the mouse and shoot to move and to kill.
Yeah, you have to.
Oh yeah, that was
you
fun.
Propel
yeah,
yourself
yeah.
by firing your gun feet.
Yeah, to, and yeah. arms. It's just four flopping limbs that sort of gun limb. But the prequel.
It's actually a literary adaptation of Quap.
What?
It's the hardcore. It's just, you know, it's the hardcore.
It's
like the
oh, it's of Quap. It's the Visceral Games Quap.
Yeah,
it's gun limb. Wow, Steve was destroyed.
That's perfect.
What was weird, though, about the concept, I mean, there was concept art for a bunch of stuff, some of which was more conventional. But the weirdest one, in addition to Gunhead, which was pretty goddamn weird, there was an Oliver Twist game, but it looked like a really sort of faithful, genuine interpretation of Oliver Twist. Like, it had this really nice
kind of soft style. Game? That was Gunhead colon Oliver Twist.
Oliver Twist, yeah.
Oliver Twist colon Gunhead. Well,
he sort of falls into a pit of acid and emerges horribly scarred, and the only way they can save his upper body is to replace his head
with a gun.
And at that point, you know, he adopts Gunhead.
You want some worst.
That would be an amazing tagline. But the Oliver Twist, the actual Oliver Twist game, it was odd because it looked really cool. I don't know what the game would have been. I guess it would have been a platformer thing, but the artwork looked really nice.
Wow, a platformer.
I know, surprise. I'm just guessing. I have no idea if that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
It was actually a 2D platformer for the SNES, originally published by THQ, but they dropped it. Like Capcom. The Mask platformer. For
it was developed by Capcom.
If it was developed by
that
Capcom,
would have been developed by Capcom back in those days.
Yeah.
It'd have sweet music and use the Mega Man engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why, like, Aladdin or whatever was actually good.
I really liked Aladdin.
The Super Nintendo one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of those Capcom Disney licenses.
I never played that.
It was a Virgin Interactive, like Dave Perry, I think, maybe? Was that
the thing
I was doing before Shiny?
I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah.
DuckTales.
But I mean, I mean, honestly, and I know that I'm not in the majority of people who listen to this podcast when I say this. I mean, I personally enjoyed the Aladdin game more than Mega Man because I didn't own a video game console. Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't play those games, so I sucked balls at Mega Man.
Well, the Aladdin game was cool because it was...
I couldn't beat three screens of Mega Man. Like, I don't know.
I liked that the Super Nintendo Aladdin was kind of like a halfway thing between the sort of Prince of Persia jump and swing stuff and the Mega Man.
It just felt really fun to play. It was really fluid.
I mean, it was
cool.
A really well-done game. Yeah.
Yep.
That was a weird era.
It was a weird era, yeah, in that respect, yeah. Absolutely. Video games.
So we're probably done with this episode.
I think we're probably pretty much done.
We don't know when the next one of these is coming out. It's not weekly.
It's not weekly. It's probably more like monthly.
It's like yearly.
Probably like, you know, put one out every decade or so.
We don't know. Yeah, we don't have a schedule for this. We might eventually settle on one. But for now, video games.
True of video games.
Steve, any final words?
Thanks for listening.
Stairs.
Oh, yeah.
Lieutenant Cotta Blake.
Video game.
This episode was recorded in front of a live studio audience at Flaming Orangutan Studios.
I want energy.
Welcome.
Energy. Come on.
It's February 12th.
Don't do that.
Don't look at how long we've been recording.
That's not what I was looking at.
Don't look
at
your
computer. I can't read that from here.
He was looking for spikes.
Yeah.
It's February 12th, 2010, and this is the Idle Thumbs Podcast, Episode 1.
And I'm Chris Remo.
It's not normally me next.
But Nick's not here anymore.
That's true.
Because we murdered him.
Yeah, but Nick always went last.
Exactly.
I'm Chris Remo, I'm Nick Brecken, and I'm Jake Rodkin.
No, and I'm Nick Brecken. Wasn't he always, and I'm Nick Brecken?
No.
I haven't actually
listened
to this.
No, because it was always, I'm Chris Remo, I'm Nick Brecken. He would interrupt you, therefore he was second.
You're right. You're correct.
But Bronstring, Merrick Bronstring.
He is not included.
Merrick. Merrick.
Bronstring. Bronstring, Merrick Bronstring.
Bronstring. Bronstring, Merrick Bronstring. Bronstring. Merrick Bronstring. Bronstring.
Gold game gold.
Oh, Jesus.
Stairs.
Now we have to start over again.
This episode is for February 12th, 2010.
The year of our Lord, 2010. Or
we
common
could,
era.
We could give them a title intentionally, and you could say it.
This is episode, yeah.
One. This is episode one?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, otherwise it's all one big sentence again, and that's what you didn't want
to
do. So.
Welcome to the Idle Thumbs Podcast. This is episode one, February 12, 2010.
Yeah.
And then we just have spaceship sound in the background.
We have a whole like space race, like... documentary overdub with like mission control.
Right.
T-9.
It's just this
is the Idle Thumbs Podcast.
Def Con.
Yeah. Idle Thumbs.
Every line has to have.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Is it the equivalent like, of like.
So
Mario fart.
This is the Idle. What were you saying?
Did you say Wario fart?
I said Mario fart.
Super Wario fart.
That is a thing that Wario would have. You ready?
What were we saying that it was going to be?
I don't know.
Welcome to the Idle Thumbs podcast. This is episode one.
This is for this date. This is Chris Remo. This is Steve Gibbs.
We are recording this episode to be released.
This episode is being recorded. This is the internet. How did we even used to start it?
Blake?
Lock and load, rock and roll, stay frosty, guns hot.
Thumbs.
Oscar Mike.